Months ago, a young fellow called on my practical joking friend and asked for a sales job. The fellow had a terrible stutter, though, and my friend decided right here was a chance to play a joke on me. So the friend told the stammering applicant that he wasn't in the market for a salesman right now, but one of his friends, me, had a spot to fill. Then he phoned me, and boy did he give this fellow a build-up. Not suspecting anything, I said, "Send him right over." 30 minutes later, in he walked. The young fellow hadn't said three words before I knew why my friend was so eager to send him over.
I'm Jack R., he said.
"Mr. X sent me over to talk to you about a job. Almost every word was a struggle. I thought to myself, this guy couldn't sell a dollar bill for 90 cents on Wall Street. I was sore at my friend, but I really felt sorry for this fellow, so I thought the least I could do was to ask him some polite questions while I thought up a good excuse as to why I couldn't use him. As we talked on, however, I discovered this fellow was no stoop. He was intelligent. He handled himself very nicely, but I just couldn't overlook the fact that he stuttered. Finally, I decided I'd wind up the interview by asking one last question. "What makes you think you can sell?" "Well," he said, "I learn fast, I like people, I think you've got a good company, and I want to make money. Now, I do have a speech impairment, but that doesn't bother me, so why should it bother anybody else?" His answer showed me he had all the really important qualifications for a salesman. I decided right then to give him a chance, and you know, he's working out very well. Even a speech impairment in a talker's profession is a triviality if the person has the big qualities. Practice these three procedures to help yourself think about trivialities. 1. Keep your eyes focused on the big objective. Many times, we're like the salesman who, failing to make the sale, reports to his manager, "Yes, but I sure convinced the customer he was wrong." In selling, the big objective is winning sales, not arguments. In marriage, the big objective is peace, happiness, tranquility, not winning quarrels or saying, "I could have told you so." In working with employees, the big objective is developing their full potential, not making issues out of their minor errors. In living with neighbors, the big objective is mutual respect and friendship, not seeing if you can have their dog impounded because once in a while it barks at night. Paraphrasing some military lingo, it is much better to lose a battle and win the war than to win a battle and lose the war. Resolve to keep your eyes on the big ball. 2. Ask, is it really important? Before becoming negatively excited, just ask yourself, is it important enough for me to get all worked up about? There is no better way to avoid frustration over petty matters than to use this medicine. At least 90% of quarrels and feuds would never take place if we just faced troublesome situations with, is this really important? 3. Don't fall into the triviality trap. In making speeches, solving problems, counseling employees, think of those things that really matter, things that make the difference. Don't become submerged under surface issues. Concentrate on important things. Take this test to measure the size of your thinking. Here listed are several common situations of how petty thinkers and big thinkers see the same situation. Check yourself, then decide which will get me where I want to go, petty thinking or big thinking. The same situation handled in two entirely different ways. The choice is yours. Situation: expense accounts. The petty thinker's approach: figures out ways to increase income through chiseling on expense accounts. The big thinker's approach: figures out ways to increase income by selling more merchandise. Situation: conversation. The petty thinker's approach:
talks about the negative qualities of his friends, the economy, his company, the competition. The Big Thinker's approach talks about the positive qualities of his friends, his company, the competition. Progress believes in retrenchment or, at best, the status quo, or believes in expansion. Future views the future as limited, or sees the future as very promising. Work looks for ways to avoid work, or looks for more ways and things to do, especially helping others. Competition competes with the average, or competes with the best. Budget problems figures out ways to save money by cutting down on necessary items, or figures out ways to increase income and buy more of the necessary items. Goals sets goals low, or sets goals high. Goals vision sees only the short run, or is preoccupied with the long run. Security is preoccupied with security problems, or regards security as a natural companion of success. Companionship surrounds himself with petty thinkers, or surrounds himself with persons with large progressive ideas. Mistakes magnifies minor errors, turns them into big issues, or ignores errors of little consequence. Remember, it pays in every way to think big. 1. Don't sell yourself short. Conquer the crime of self-deprecation. Concentrate on your assets. You're better than you think you are. 2. Use the Big Thinker's vocabulary. Use big, bright, cheerful words. Use words that promise victory, hope, happiness, pleasure. Avoid words that create unpleasant images of failure, defeat, grief. 3. Stretch your vision. See what can be, not just what is. Practice adding value to things, to people, and to yourself. 4. Get the big view of your job. Think, really think, your present job is important. That next promotion depends mostly on how you think toward your present job. 5. Think above trivial things. Focus your attention on big objectives. Before getting involved in a petty matter, ask yourself, is it really important? Grow big by thinking big. Chapter 5. How to Think and Dream Creatively. First, let's clear up a common fallacy about the meaning of creative thinking. For some illogical reason, science, engineering, art, and writing got tabbed as about the only truly creative pursuits. Most people associate creative thinking with things like the discovery of electricity or a polio vaccine, or the writing of a novel, or the development of color television. Certainly, accomplishments like these are evidence of creative thinking. Each forward step made in the conquest of space is the result of creative thinking, lots of it. But creative thinking is not reserved for certain occupations, nor is it restricted to super intelligent people. Well then, what is creative thinking? A low-income family devises a plan to send their son to a leading university. That's creative thinking. A family turns the street's most undesirable lot into the neighborhood beauty spot. That's creative thinking. A minister develops a plan that doubles his Sunday evening attendance. That's creative thinking. Figuring out ways to simplify record keeping, selling the impossible customer, keeping the children occupied constructively, making employees really like their work, or preventing a certain quarrel. All of these are examples of practical, everyday creative thinking. Creative thinking is simply finding new, improved ways to do anything. The rewards of all types of success, success in the home, at work, in the community, hinge on finding ways to do things better. Now, let's see what we can do to develop and strengthen our creative thinking ability. Step 1. Believe it can be done. Here is a basic truth. To do anything, we must first believe it can be done. Believing something can be done sets the mind in motion to find a way to do it. To illustrate this point of creative thinking in training sessions, I often use this example. I ask the group, how many of you feel it is possible to eliminate jails within the next 30 years? Invariably, the group looks bewildered, not quite sure they heard right, and thinking they are listening to a real fuzz brain. So, after a pause, I repeat, how many of you feel it is possible to eliminate jails within the next 30 years? Once they're sure I'm not joking, someone always blasts me with something like, you mean to say you want to turn all those murderers, thieves, and rapists loose? Don't you realize what this would mean? Why, none of us would be safe. We have to have jails. Then the others cut loose. All order would break down if we didn't have jails. Some people are born criminals. If anything, we need more jails. Did you read in this morning's paper about that murder? And the group goes on, telling me all sorts of good reasons why we must have jails. One fellow even suggested we've got to have jails so the police and prison guards can have jobs. After about 10 minutes of letting the group prove why we can't eliminate the need for jails, I say to them, now, let me mention here that this question of eliminating jails is used to make a point. Each of you has come up with reasons why we can't eliminate the need for jails. Will you do me a favor? Will you try extra hard for a few minutes to believe we can eliminate jails? Joining in the spirit of the experiment, the group says, in effect, oh well, but just for kicks. Then I ask, now, assuming we can eliminate jails, how could we begin? Suggestions come slowly at first. Someone hesitantly says something like, well, you might cut down crime if you established more youth centers. Before long, the group, which 10 minutes ago was solidly against the idea, now begins to work up real enthusiasm. Work to eliminate poverty. Most crime stems from the low income levels. Conduct research to spot potential criminals before they commit a crime. Develop surgical procedures to cure some kinds of criminals. Educate law enforcement personnel in positive methods of reform. These are just samples of the 78 specific ideas I've tabulated that could help accomplish the goal of eliminating jails. When you believe, your mind finds ways to do. This experiment has just one point. When you believe something is impossible, your mind goes to work for you to prove why. But when you believe, really believe, something can be done, your mind goes to work for you and helps you find the ways to do it. Believing something can be done paves the way for creative solutions. Believing something can't be done is destructive thinking. This point applies to all situations, little and big. The political leaders who do not genuinely believe permanent world peace can be established will fail because their minds are closed to creative ways to bring about peace. The economists who believe business depressions are inevitable will not develop creative ways to beat the business cycle. In a similar fashion, you can find ways to like a person if you believe you can. You can discover solutions to personal problems if you believe you can. You can find a way to purchase that new, larger home if you believe you can. Belief releases creative powers. Disbelief puts the brakes on. Believe, and you'll start thinking constructively. Your mind will create a way if you let it. A little over 2 years ago, a young man asked me to help him find a job with more future. He was employed as a clerk in the credit department of a mail-order company and felt that he was getting nowhere. We talked about his past record and what he wanted to do. After knowing something about him, I said, I admire you very much for wanting to move up the ladder to a better job and more responsibility. But getting a start in the kind of job you want requires a college degree these days. I notice you've finished 3 semesters. May I suggest you finish college? Going summers, you can do it in 2 years. Then I'm sure you can land the job you want, with the company you want to work for. I realize, he answered, that a college education would help, but it's impossible for me to go back to school. Impossible? Why? I asked. Well, for one thing, he began, I'm 24. On top of that, my wife and I are expecting our second child in a couple of months. We barely get by now on what I make. I wouldn't have time to study since I'd have to keep my job. It's just impossible, that's all. This young man really had himself convinced that finishing college was impossible. Then I said to him, if you believe it is impossible to finish school, then it is. But by the same token, if you'll just believe it is possible to return to the university, a solution will come. Now here's what I would like you to do. Make up your mind you are going to go back to school. Let that one thought dominate your thinking. Then think, really think, about how you can do it and still support your family. Come back in a couple of weeks and let me know what ideas you've come up with. My young friend returned 2 weeks later. I thought a lot about what you said, he began. I've decided I must go back to school. I haven't figured out all the angles yet, but I'll find a solution. And he did. He managed to get a scholarship provided by a trade association, which paid his tuition, books, and incidentals. He rearranged his work schedule so he could attend classes. His enthusiasm and the promise of a better life won him his wife's full support. Together, they creatively found ways to budget money and time more effectively. Last month, he received his degree one day and went to work the next as a management trainee for a large corporation. Where there's a will, there is a way. Believe it can be done. That's basic to creative thinking. Here are suggestions to help you develop creative power through belief. 1. Eliminate the word impossible from your thinking and speaking vocabularies. Impossible is a failure word. The thought, it's impossible, sets off a chain reaction of other thoughts to prove you're right. 2. Think of something you've been wanting to do but felt you couldn't. Now make a list of reasons why you can do it. Many of us whip and defeat our desires simply because we concentrate on why we can't, when the only thing worthy of our mental concentration is why we can. Recently, I read a newspaper item that said there are too many counties in most states. The article pointed out that most county boundaries were established decades before the first automobile was built, and while the horse and buggy was the chief mode of travel. But today, with fast automobiles and good roads, there is no reason why 3 or 4 counties could not be combined. This would cut down greatly on duplicated services so that taxpayers would actually get better service for less money. The writer of this article said he thought he had stumbled across a really live idea, so he interviewed 30 people at random to get their reactions. The result? Not one person thought the idea had merit, even though it would provide them with better local government at less cost. That's an example of traditional thinking. The traditional thinker's mind is paralyzed. He reasons, it's been this way for 100 years, therefore it must be good and must stay this way. Why risk a change? Average people have always resented progress. Many voiced a protest toward the automobile on the grounds that nature meant for us to walk or use horses. The airplane seemed drastic to many. Man had no right to enter the province reserved for birds. A lot of status quoers still insist that man has no business in space. One top missile expert recently gave an answer to this kind of thinking. Man belongs, says Dr. von Braun, where man wants to go. Around 1900, a sales executive discovered a scientific principle of sales management. It received a lot of publicity and even found its way into textbooks. The principle was this: there is one best way to sell a product. Find the best way, then never deviate from it. Fortunately for this man's company, new leadership came in time to save the organization from financial ruin. Contrast that experience with the philosophy of Crawford H. Greenwalt, president of one of the nation's largest business organizations, E.I. DuPont de Nemours. In a talk at Columbia University, Mr. Greenwalt said, "There are many ways in which a good job can be done, as many ways, in fact, as there are men to whom the task is given. In truth, there is no one best way to do anything. There is no one best way to decorate an apartment, landscape a lawn, make a sale, rear a child, or cook a steak. There are as many best ways as there are creative minds. Nothing grows in ice. If we let tradition freeze our minds, new ideas can't sprout. Make this test sometime soon. Propose one of these ideas to someone and then watch his behavior. 1. The postal system, long a government monopoly, should be turned over to private enterprise. 2. Presidential elections should be held every 2 or 6 years instead of 4. 3. Regular hours for retail stores should be 1 p.m. to 8 p.m. instead of 9 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. 4. The retirement age should be raised to 70. Whether these ideas are sound or practical is not the point. What is significant is how a person handles propositions like these. If he laughs at the idea and doesn't give it a second thought, and probably 95% will laugh at it, chances are he suffers from tradition paralysis. But the 1 in 20 who says, "That's an interesting idea, tell me more about it," has a mind that's turned to creativity. Traditional thinking is personal enemy number 1 for the person who is interested in a creative personal success program. Traditional thinking freezes your mind, blocks your progress, and prevents you from developing creative power. Here are 3 ways to fight it. 1. Become receptive to ideas. Welcome new ideas. Destroy these thought repellents. Won't work. Can't be done. It's useless. And it's stupid. A very successful friend of mine who holds a major position with an insurance company said to me, "I don't pretend to be the smartest guy in the business, but I think I am the best sponge in the insurance industry. I make it a point to soak up all the good ideas I can." 2. Be an experimental person. Break up fixed routines. Expose yourself to new restaurants, new books, new theaters, new friends. Take a different route to work someday. Take a different vacation this year. Do something new and different this weekend. If your work is in distribution, develop an interest in production, accounting, finance, and the other elements of business. This gives you breadth and prepares you for larger responsibilities. 3. Be progressive, not regressive. Not, "That's the way we did it where I used to work, so we ought to do it that way here," but, "How can we do it better than we did it where I used to work?" Not backward, regressive thinking, but forward, progressive thinking. Because you got up at 5:30 a.m. to deliver papers or milk the cows when you were a youngster doesn't necessarily mean it's a good idea for you to require your children to do the same. Imagine what would happen to the Ford Motor Company if its management allowed itself to think, "This year we've built the ultimate in automobiles. Further improvement is impossible. Therefore, all experimental engineering and designing activities are hereby permanently terminated." Even the mammoth Ford Motor Company would shrivel fast with this attitude. Successful people, like successful businesses, live with these questions. How can I improve the quality of my performance? How can I do better? Absolute perfection in all human undertakings, from building missiles to rearing children, is unattainable. This means there is endless room for improvement. Successful people know this, and they are always searching for a better way. Note, the successful person doesn't ask, "Can I do it better?" He knows he can. So he phrases the question, "How can I do it better?" A few months ago, a former student of mine, in business for just 4 years, opened her fourth hardware store. This was quite a feat, considering the young lady's small initial capital investment of only $3,500, strong competition from other stores, and the relatively short time she had been in business. I visited her new store shortly after it opened to congratulate her on the fine progress she had made. In an indirect way, I asked her how she was able to make a success of 3 stores and open a 4th one, when most merchants had to struggle to make a success of just 1 store. Naturally, she answered, I worked hard, but just getting up early and working late isn't responsible for the 4 stores. Most people in my business work hard. The main thing I attribute my success to is my self-styled weekly improvement program. A weekly improvement program? Sounds impressive. How does it work? I asked. Well, it really isn't anything elaborate, she continued. It's just a plan to help me do a better job as each week rolls around. To keep my forward thinking on the track, I've divided my job into 4 elements: customers, employees, merchandise, and promotion. All during the week, I make notes and jot down ideas as to how I can improve my business. Then, every Monday evening, I set aside 4 hours to review the ideas I've jotted down and figure out how to put the solid ones to use in the business. In this 4-hour period, I force myself to take a hard look at my operation. I don't simply wish more customers would shop in my store. Instead, I ask myself, what can I do to attract more customers? How can I develop regular, loyal customers? She went on describing numerous little innovations that made her first 3 stores so successful. Things like the way she arranged the merchandise within her stores, her suggestion selling technique that sold 2 out of 3 customers merchandise they had not planned to buy when they entered her stores, the credit plan she devised when many of her customers were out of work because of a strike, the contest she developed that boosted sales during a slack season. I ask myself, what can I do to improve my merchandise offerings? And I get ideas. Let me cite just one case. 4 weeks ago, it occurred to me that I should do something to get more youngsters into the store. I reasoned if I had something here to draw the kids to the store, I'd also draw more of the parents. I kept thinking about it, and then this idea came. Put in a line of small carted toys for children in the 4 to 8 age bracket. It's working. The toys take little space, and I make a nice profit on them. But most important, the toys have increased store traffic. Believe me, she went on, my weekly improvement plan works. Just by conscientiously asking myself, how can I do a better job, I find the answers. It's a rare Monday night that I don't come up with some plan or technique that makes that profit and loss statement look better. And I've learned something else, too, about successful merchandising, something that I think every person going into business for himself should know. What's that? I asked. Just this. It isn't so much what you know when you start that matters. It's what you learn and put to use after you open your doors that counts most. Big success calls for persons who continually set higher standards for themselves and others, persons who are searching for ways to increase efficiency, to get more output at lower cost, do more with less effort. Top success is reserved for the "I can do it better" kind of person. General Electric uses the slogan, "Progress is our most important product." Why not make progress your most important product? The "I can do better" philosophy works magic. When you ask yourself, "How can I do better?" your creative power is switched on, and ways for doing things better suggest themselves. Here is a daily exercise that